you know, making me the girl I am today. Yeah, this is weird. Getting a little emotional here, but I love you all. Have a great rest of your finals. You know, have a great life. I don't know. Ew, this is so weird. Okay, goodbye forever.
Between those things.
So it seems like cosmology is kind of like a subset in a way of astrology.
Not astrology, but astronomy.
Astronomy. Got it. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not yelling at you for that. But the but yeah, in some sense, cosmology is kind of a subfield of physics and or a subfield of astronomy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, got it. And what do you study specifically? I mean, I think you kind of hit on this a little bit, but
yeah, I mean, the stuff that I've done my research on in my career is it kind of goes broadly under the banner of a thing called large scale structure. So I worry about like how does stuff evolve from the very early universe to the later universe? I mean, we look out in the universe today and we see this galaxies all over the place arrayed in these really interesting patterns. And the question is, how do they get that way? So I go back to the very early universe and look, because, you know, if you go back early enough, things were very uniformly spread out, but obviously they're not today. How did we get from there to here? Trying to understand all the funky equations which describe how that happens and whatnot. So, yeah.
Okay, so you like to think about space through time.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of in a way.
For sure.
How much time are we talking? Like, what's kind of the scale?
So the universe, as we know it, is about 14 billion years old, a little less than 14 billion years old, which, you know, I don't know. It's so much different, of course, than human lifetimes and things like that, that it's hard to grasp how long that is, but it's enormous. But I don't know, maybe the most surprising thing for me is, though, that it is finite. I mean, it's a long time. But it's not forever, right? I mean, the universe has only been around for 14 billion years, but it's an enormous, enormous time, such that it's very hard to have any kind of good conceptual idea of how long it is.
Professor Cooney got a little ahead of me here, but the cosmic calendar is a way of conceptualizing the 14 billion year history of the universe, because it becomes compressed into a single calendar year, meaning each month equates to 1.15 billion years, with the Big Bang happening at 12 midnight on January 1st. In this very moment right now, the last millisecond of the last minute of the year on December 31st. Going all the way back to the beginning, if the universe explodes into existence on January 1st, the Milky Way doesn't form until May 1st. It's not until September 9th that our solar system emerges. It's September 14th when Earth takes shape. Unicellular life takes the stage on September 25th, but it's not until December 25th until dinosaurs ruled the Earth. And just 5 days after that, they go extinct. Humans don't make their debut until 10:30 p.m. on December 31st. At 11:46 p.m., humanity tamed fire. At 11:59 p.m. in 20 seconds, we figured out how to domesticate plants and animals and learned agriculture. At 11:59 p.m. in 35 seconds, the first cities emerge. And the last 10 seconds contain our entire recorded history, everyone you've ever heard of in a history book, and everyone and everything you've ever loved exists in that last 10 seconds. It can be kind of distressing to move through the world thinking that your individual life is insignificant compared to the vastly large universe, but it's really all about perspective.
You know, we are immaterial when it comes to the universe as a whole. Individuals and even our entire species, our entire solar system is irrelevant when it comes to the big picture. But who cares? Like, it's cool to get an idea of how big the universe is and think about all these big things, but also, in your life, in your universe, you are the most important thing, right? We are the most important thing. And this, you know, one thing that that can make you feel a little bit important is we've been looking out there for a long time and yet have not seen any other evidence that there's, you know, I would be shocked if there, of course, are not aliens and other civilizations out there. I'm sure there are, but they're not ultra widespread, right? It's not like every, you know, we've looked at lots and lots of different solar systems that are clearly do not have technological civilizations in them. So it could be, and it's likely actually, that intelligent life or technological life is rare in the universe. I mean, it's out there for sure. But so let's not screw that up, right? I mean, this is, we're just getting, we are a kind of form of the universe that's learning about itself. And that may be really rare in the universe. And that's really special and interesting. And so we don't want to think of ourselves as entirely insignificant because, we may be one of the rare instances that the universe is learning about itself.
The power in humanity comes from our ability to collaborate and depend on one another. We're built to be social. Maybe that comes from, in some part, understanding that our existence is precious. We like to share our ideas and our hearts with each other because they're so rare. To put this to scale, there are 1 million trillion combinations of human DNA. There are 1 million trillion trillion possible humans that could ever be created. That's the number 1 and 30 zeros. However, only 100 billion have ever been born in the history of humanity. That might seem like a lot, but when you compare the two, there's only been 0.00000000000000001% of all possible humans. That's 0.16 zeros and then a one. We are the only living, breathing planet in the history of the entire universe that we know of. And how special is that? How precious is that? What a shame it goes to waste. Plus, we're only on Earth for the fleeting blink of an eye. For maximum 120 years-ish. How much good can we get out of our one life?
Given we are the only known conscious and advanced life form, we've been given a very fleeting moment to make an impact. And for me personally, I want to do as much good as I can. Part of that for me is learning about science and then talking about it. And Carl Sagan had the same sort of passion.
One of the great things that Carl Sagan does is it's like it's so obvious how much he loves science and astronomy and the universe. And he gets that across. And you're like, I love this too. And it didn't, like I said, it didn't matter. I mean, that did cause a lot of people to go become astronomers and physicists, but it just also got the general public excited about science. And I just wish that we had more programming like that. I mean, scientists love to sit back and like shake their finger at the public for not being scientifically literate, but a lot of times it's our fault for not doing a good job of communicating how awesome science is to the general public. We generally write our papers to other people in the field. And of course, you have to do that in some respects, but we need to do a better job of communicating. And that was one thing. I mean, even Carl Sagan in his day, in the scientific community, there were parts of the scientific community that kind of looked down on him and what he was doing because he was spending his time communicating with the public rather than just doing the science. But that's crazy, right? We desperately need people who are good at communicating to communicate the awesome things in the public. And there are people like that do that these days. There is Neil deGrasse Tyson and Brian Greene and a bunch of other science folks that do this, but we need more. We need better. We need a better way of communicating how important and powerful and game-changing science is.
It's easy to feel guilty for our impact on Earth. Daily things like whether or not you recycle that plastic bottle, whether or not you turn off your lights or take a quicker shower can weigh on you. I know they weigh on me. It makes you feel alone and powerless. The thing is, though, those solutions are pushed on us to make us feel like we're helping, when in reality, if everyone in the world cleaned out and recycled every single piece of plastic they used, that plastic will still be here for 500 years, no matter if it's recycled or not. The real solutions are the solutions that stop plastic production for good, or shift reliance on fossil fuel energy to renewable energy, or halting meat production. All this to say, the large-scale changes are not up to us entirely. We can do things to help, like not buying plastic products in the first place, or investing in solar panels, or switching to a vegetarian or vegan diet. However, those things can be expensive and inaccessible. So the long-term solution is a system shift that makes it easy for people to do those things. Our individual impact on Earth is minute compared to the conglomeration of corporate and collective impacts. But our individual impact on each other is really powerful. It's easy to change the minds and practices of a handful of friends and family compared to a corporation like Exxon, for example. But if that handful of friends and family spreads those practices to a handful of their own friends and family, that change can become just as powerful.
It's not all doom and gloom. Yeah. Like, I'm with you. Like, you watch the news and it's easy to get very upset about the state of the world and the state of the environment, especially, right? Obviously. And, you know, we always talk just about climate change, but of course there are a lot more issues and environmental stuff than just climate change that are big, serious problems. And it can, I mean, I feel for you in something like environmental studies where you're looking at this stuff very carefully, because it can be very easy to get really upset and be like, we have no future and all that kind of business, and we've ruined everything forever. But I'm with you also on the positive part. Like, one of the really awesome things I take out of being a scientist, being an astronomer, is I see what humanity is capable of. I mean, obviously we're capable of horrible things. We still have animal brains, we still fight each other all the time and do all the terrible things. But we're capable of ludicrous things. When I look at, I mean, we have robots wandering around the surface of Mars doing experiments. I mean, like, it's amazing. And some of the other things, like gravitational wave detections. I mean, it doesn't matter what this, but these things are impossibly complicated, and yet we're doing them, right? And this is just in astronomy. The same thing is true in medicine and a variety of other fields in science. So absolutely we're capable of pulling ourselves out of this. In some sense, you know, you need the dread, and I mean, some bad things are coming. I mean, the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is, we have irreparably altered, I won't say irreparably, but we have altered the atmosphere in a very significant way. It will take a very long time for that to change. But of course, geologically speaking and cosmologically speaking, there is a lot of time. And you're absolutely right. In the blink of an eye, humanity will be gone, and that's a little bit sad, but then the Earth will be absolutely fine, and different species will evolve, and all these different things. But even before that, we do absolutely have the ability to kind of fix things, and we're headed that way. We just have to have the will.
Something that John Green wrote in his review of Humanity's Temporal Range from his book The Anthropocene Reviewed stuck with me. He ponders his eschatological anxiety, or the fear of the world ending, but he comes to the conclusion that we're so often surrounded by ideas that we are the period at the end of a very long sentence of the history of Earth. But what if we can just be a comma? Or, like he says, what if we fight like there's something to fight for? Like we are something to fight for. And I think the best way to fight is to refuse to succumb to the doom and despair and focus on joy.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, like looking at the other side of humanity that you see in the news, looking at the amazing things that we're capable of. I mean, I even as an astronomer, like, for example, I if you'd told me that we were able to do some of the things that we're actually doing now, I mean, like, we live in the future. I mean, it's when I was a kid, all of these things that we're talking, that we do now, like detecting gravitational waves or putting robots on Mars, I mean, this is science fiction. We're doing them now, right? I mean, if people just decide we want to do a cool thing and then do it, we're amazing. We can do amazing things. We can, you know, we can scrub the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and stuff. If we have the will, I mean, the money exists if we just have the will to do it. And I mean, people are just capable of amazing, amazing things. So I get great joy out of hearing of the really amazing things that humanity does. I mean, I get joy out of course, much simpler things. I like to go on hikes and do them. I'm a nature-y person myself, which is one of the reasons it's sad we lose it. But in any event, I think that humanity has this, I mean, we have a dark core, but then we have this tremendous positive potential. And I do get a lot of joy. I mean, when I think about the future and my kids' future and all those things, it can be easy to fret, but I think we're going to be okay. I think that the positive side of humanity will win out in the end, even if it's hard to see that sometimes.
It's important not to forget the miraculous and joyful part of our existence, because no matter what each of us believes, we made it here, and we're living right now. For me, when I read outside, when it's sunny with a slight breeze, or share a meal with someone I love, or laugh about an inside joke with a friend, I'm anchored by those little moments of joy. And we all have moments like these.
What are some little moments of joy that happen in your everyday life?
Just relaxing in nature is just always so great to ground myself. So
for sure, just like hanging out with friends. We're getting halal shacks, so that's kind of fun. I don't know, small stuff like that.
Definitely anytime the weather is warmer, but yeah, halal shack for sure.
Being outside and seeing everyone else outside.
Let's see. I don't know, music, friends, like just getting stuff done off my to-do list. Starting a new show like The Pit. Fire. Eating a good meal. Oh, love it.
Honestly, like right now, because it's so warm and like happy outside, it's like 60 degrees out, which hasn't been a normal thing for like the past month or so. So, I don't know, it's really nice out.
I really enjoy hanging out with my roommates at night when we all just say stupid things and play Sporkle games. And I also really love getting Ben and Jerry's from the Marché.
It's easy to get wrapped up in focusing on the urgency and the weight of the problems we face. It's important to know the facts and the consequences in order to understand the complicated issue of climate change. But at the end of the day, we're all just people. It's also important to take steps back so that fear or anxiety does not turn into hopelessness. Because in the wise words of President Snow from The Hunger Games, hope is the only thing stronger than fear. Now, I don't think that tyrannical President Snow is a good role model by any means, but that sentiment I think is extremely moving. When we become surrounded by darkness, we always need at least a little bit of light to move forward. Otherwise, we could find ourselves lost and going in circles. I encourage you to always look for that little bit of light, that moment of joy, and bask in it. Thank you so much for listening. This episode of Bridge the Gap was produced, written, and edited by me, Evangeline Butts. My editors are Charlotte King, Grace Wong, and Liliana Mefford. Thank you to them and everyone I interviewed for this episode: Jim Cooney, Aiden, Peyton, Alyssa, Katie, Ellie, Sarah, Cooper, Lincoln, and Sarah G. Music by The Sax Guy, Dozer, Sunday at Slim's, and Poddington Bear.
Try me, darling, tell me I need you. Try me. Didn't you know
been made by the maker. Rock and roll. Shout out.
You got me feeling like I'm We'll be right back.